Programming on WILL is made possible in part by Strawberry Fields on West Springfield Avenue in downtown Urbana. Strawberry Fields has an in-store nutritionist, provides a wide assortment of natural foods, vitamins, and supplements, as well as a full deli, coffee bar, bulk herbs, fresh breads, and produce.
This is the Afternoon Magazine on AM 580 and online at WILL.UIUC.EDU. Good afternoon. My name is Celeste Quinn. Today, listeners, I invite your questions for registered dietitian Susan Kundrat. Susan joins us once a month, usually on the first Monday of the month, to talk about diet and nutrition. So if you have questions about diet and nutrition, you can give us a call this afternoon. Here are the numbers in the Champaign-Urbana area, 333-9455. That's 333-WILL. Anywhere else, call toll-free 800-222-9455, 800-222-WILL. Susan Kundrat is a sports and wellness nutritionist and the owner of Nutrition on the Move. She specializes in developing personalized nutrition plans for athletes and the general public. She's an adjunct lecturer with the Food Science and Human Nutrition Department at the University of Illinois, and she's also a frequent contributor to magazines on health and fitness. She is the author of 101 Sports Nutrition Tips. You'll find her on the web at www.nutritiononthemove.net. Questions about diet and nutrition? Give us a call. Again, the phone number is 333-9455 and our toll-free number, 800-222-9455. Welcome back. Good to see you.
Good afternoon. Good to see you, too.
Boy, it is miserable out there today, isn't it?
It is very hot.
Yeah. Okay. Well, one of the things we want to talk about this afternoon is staying comfortable in the heat and the humidity, and one of those things would be to keep hydrated, and we'll do that. But first, let's talk with a listener who's already waiting for us on line one. Good afternoon.
Hi. How are you doing?
Fine. How are you?
I'm doing great. On my way to see my granddaughter. I had a question. My granddaughter's 27 months and is at the low end of the weight chart, and the doctor's encouraging, she's going to be living with me, is encouraging us to help her gain weight, and I was looking for some ways to do that without including lots of sugary snacks in her diet.
Yeah, does she have any allergies or any problems with any foods?
Nope, she does pretty well with everything.
Okay. Well, a couple things you can think of. One is, you know, we think about energy density of food, meaning, you know, for the amount of food you eat, what's the calorie content besides the nutrient content, but just how much energy does the food have? How many calories does the food have? And so some of the foods that tend to be the highest in energy would be things like proteins, for example, meats, beans, nuts and seeds, and probably at her age, if there's no peanut allergy, something like peanut butter, or almond butter, soy butter, something like that would be fine too. And that's real concentrated for a small amount to eat, which is something that you're looking for. I also think things, you know, at that age, certainly full fat products, if she needs the calories, are fine. And so something like a full fat yogurt, for example, if you have a carton of just regular fruit yogurt, it might be 250 calories, whereas the light versions are about 60 or 80. So, go ahead.
What about one of the things someone had suggested to me was like those instant breakfasts.
Mm-hmm.
Making those into a milkshake.
Yeah, that's fine too. You can use something like that, carnation instant breakfast, and you can mix that. Again, it says to mix with milk, but you can mix it with ice cream or frozen yogurt, something like that for some extra calories. And that works really well too, because kids usually like that. Again, that's typically sweet, but one thing you can do is maybe make just a smaller portion of that, but add in some of the nut butter, and that really bumps up calories as well. So you could put a tablespoon of peanut butter or soy nut butter in there and maybe have half a package in milk, or mix it with yogurt instead of milk for some extra calories, and that works great.
Well, I appreciate the idea.
Sure. Another thing I might say for the caller as well is, especially, you know, with kids, sometimes it's hard to get them to eat that much when it's hot. And one thing that you can do with some of these types of products is actually mix all that together and then put them in and then freeze them and make kind of freezer pops.
Mm-hmm.
And instead of just having fruit or fruit juice, then you've got in there maybe the carnations of breakfast, or you've got some ice cream in there.
Kind of a slushy kind of a thing.
Yeah.
Or an ice cream or a popsicle kind of a thing.
Yeah, almost making your own popsicles, and those could be a good 200 calories each. And kids might eat more of those because they're cold and be easier as well.
Yeah. Also feels good on the gums.
It sure does, yeah.
If you
always
got teeth
coming in.
Exactly. Okay, next we take a listener call. A listener on line 2 in Urbana. Hi.
Hi, this is Shorib. I have a question.
Okay.
You know, recently I did my physical, and the doctor said that my bad cholesterol is pretty high. It's about 172, and she mentioned that it should be 100.
Mm-hmm.
So traditionally we take lots of rice in lunch and in dinner. So I was just wondering whether I need to change that habit and I should go with bread instead of rice. Yeah, I will hang up and listen.
Sure. Well, the couple things you want to think about, really two ways to approach the high LDL or the high bad cholesterol. One way is to think, is there much high fat, you know, is there a lot of high fat food in your diet? For example, the meats that you choose, are they as lean as they could be if you're using them with vegetables and rice with your meals? Are you getting in many sweets or many desserts like cookies or brownies or donuts or things like that that tend to be high in saturated fat or adding extra butter or extra fat? So that's one whole thing you need to think about, you know, where that might be coming from. And then the other end is to think about, yeah, could you substitute some foods? Could you change what you're eating in a way that you might add some other things that are beneficial? You know, a simple thing with rice is saying, well, if you always eat white rice, change over to brown rice because it's more gummy fiber. It's got some more fiber that we think might help bring down lipids. Another thing you could do if you like them is say, well, I'm going to have rice some of the time, but I also, if you like beans, for example, lentils, dried beans and peas, those types of carbohydrate or starch do have a significant amount of soluble fiber, which we do know does tend to bring down bad cholesterol by eating more of that good fiber. And so that might be something you could switch around and say, yes, I'm gonna bump up my fiber in general. It doesn't have to be bread. You could certainly still eat rice. I'd just try to choose more of a whole grain or brown rice, and I'd try to choose things like beans and peas. Even foods like corn, you know, have more fiber. So as a starch, that's a good option as well. And so you really want to look at it twofold. Can you bring down any fat that's in your diet that might be contributing to your cholesterol levels? Can you also add some things, add more fruits and vegetables and these beans and brown rice and things like that that might bind lipids? And then again, there's a whole host of other things you could think about doing, you know, coming from stanol and sterol esters, which you could find in supplement form. You could find them in Benecol or Take Control. Or these are products that you take in as part of your diet, and they tend to bring down lipids, bring down your bad cholesterol as well. So there's other things you can do in addition. So it sounds like with your level at 172, you definitely want to work individually with a registered dietitian so you can find a plan that really works for you. Because what we know about high cholesterol is that if you're consistent with your plan, it's always good to try diet and exercise first, because if you can do that and not go on the meds, of course, that's great. And so you really want to have a specific plan that works with your day and your diet and the things that you like to eat, but also adds enough of these foods and brings down saturated fat enough that you can say, yes, I'm going to give this a 2 or 3 month try to really be serious about what I'm doing nutritionally.
Yeah, and it's got to be a plan you can stick with.
It definitely has to be. And that's why it has to incorporate foods you like, and it has to work with your schedule, whatever your schedule's like. And, you know, I have a lot of clients who they're going to eat a snack at work anyway. So we try to bump up their snacks, or they're eating a little bit more nuts, which have the good fat and they have fiber, and they're eating maybe some oat type fiber dry cereal as opposed to a candy bar. So that, yes, they're having snack food anyway, but it's some foods that also we think, again, will maybe bring down some of that cholesterol a bit.
Okay, very good. This is the Afternoon Magazine. Registered dietitian Susan Kundrat is our guest this afternoon. 333-9455, the number in the Champaign-Urbana area if you'd like to talk with Susan. Anywhere else, toll free, 800-222-9455. Well, while we're waiting to talk with some other listeners, why don't we talk about hydration? Last time you were here, you suggested we drink a couple of cups of water right from the start when we get up in the morning, no matter the weather.
Right.
Why?
Well, part of that reason is because when we wake up in the morning, we are already dehydrated. And that will vary from person to person. But you can know how dehydrated you are if you weigh yourself when you go to bed, and then weigh yourself when you get up. Most of us are going to be down a pound or 2 or 3 pounds. 1 pound on the scale is the same as 16 ounces of water. And so for every pound you're down in the morning, you do need to start hydrating right away. So that's why I say, gosh, have a water bottle ready, have your favorite container fluids ready so you can just start drinking those. And not to say you have to drink it all within 10 minutes or anything, but just start sipping, start drinking. You know, and it is important to know, too, that things like juice and things you might have in the morning, juice, coffee, tea, mm-hmm. that all contributes to your hydration status. So it doesn't all have to be water. But that's a good way to kind of get your body back up early in the morning. I find that for a lot of my clients, they may drink a little in the morning, but it might be noon and they've only had 10, 12 ounces of fluid. And so, of course, by that time, you're even more dehydrated. So it's really hard. We try to get the fluids up right away so your body can function better.
It is more difficult for the body to cool itself in this kind of weather, in this heat and humidity. So we want to keep that in mind as well. And mm-hmm. I would imagine that fluids, while they're important throughout the year, are they more important when it's this miserable?
They're definitely more important because the whole idea is to keep your core temperature at a normal level. And, of course, it goes up some when you're out in the heat, but the higher it goes, the more problems we tend to have. And, of course, if you're exercising, your core temperature goes up higher, then, you know, we tend to see more problems with heat-related illness and those kinds of things. So it's even more important. But I think what some people don't recognize, like you say, is you don't really have to be exercising in the heat. If you're just out in the heat, it might be that you're walking 20 minutes to get someplace and you're moving around. And, gosh, by the time you get to the next store, you're very hot. And so your body's already heated up, and it doesn't take very long in this kind of heat. The other thing we do know is that kids and the elderly tend to, you know, not regulate heat as well either. So it's especially important when you're out with kids. Again, maybe they're not exercising, but you're running around, or they've just been to the park and you really don't consider that hard exercise. Well, for kids, they're going to get dehydrated very fast. And again, the same with the elderly. We tend to maybe just not drink as much at those ages. So it's real important to stay on top of it, especially now.
Okay. So in the morning when we get up, we want to rehydrate.
Mm-hmm.
And then throughout the day, we want to be aware that we need to have a glass of water or stop and smell the roses and
right.
Settle down and have a beverage. Are there points in the day when it makes sense or it's really convenient to do that?
Well, I think for example, if you're at work, I think the best thing you can do is just always have a glass of fluid right there by you. And again, it might be water. If you don't like water, maybe you'd like a flavored water, or maybe you'd like water if you had a little lemon squeezed in it or something. You know, just something that's going to taste good enough to you that you're going to drink more of it. But we do know that if it's there and we see it, we just tend to drink it more. So I think on a daily basis, having something available is helpful. One thing I try to do with a lot of my clients, if they feel like, gosh, they can't drink that much at meals because it's too heavy on the stomach, then I really try to get them by noon to take in another 20 or 30 ounces of fluid. Don't worry about drinking so much with lunch, maybe a little bit, but then save your fluid more for the afternoon. And that way we find that it just doesn't feel like it's so much to take in with lunch and doesn't bother your stomach as much.
Yeah, and food can play a role here. Maybe you'd talk with us a little bit about some of the foods that can help contribute fluid to the body.
Right. If you think about fluids with foods, you know, we have some general recommendations to say, well, probably 20% of the fluid intake that we need during the day comes from food. So in the summer, it can even be more, because you look at something like watermelon or cantaloupe or pineapple or berries that are nearly all fluid. You know, they may be 80% fluid. And so those foods to have more often, it's really a big benefit. Even things, kind of like we mentioned with a caller before, things like you take fruit and you just blend it up with a little juice and you put it into popsicles and you eat that. Well, that's almost all fluid, but it seems like a treat. So it's an easier way to get fluid in. And other foods like yogurt or cottage cheese or foods like that can be helpful too, because they're a good portion of fluid. And so anything we can do to add in, I just say, well, gosh, let's add in more fruit, even salads. Well, lettuce is mostly water, so eating those types of things are going to be helpful. Tomatoes are mostly water. So if we bump up our produce, and typically fruits but vegetables too, then we're automatically going to stay better hydrated, and so that will work dual purpose for us.
Okay. Let's take another call. A listener in Eureka on line 4. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. I became very interested when you were talking about hydration, and I just have a few questions about different liquids. There used to be a rule of thumb that was given as, it seemed like, sort of standard health advice, that a person should drink 8 ounce glasses of water per day. Is there anything to that?
Well, the most recent recommendations we have, and these came out in February of 2004, the Food and Nutrition Board completed a big review of fluid status as well as what we need for sodium, potassium, and some of the minerals there too. And they basically came up with the recommendation that most people, if they drink based on their thirst, are going to stay hydrated. Now, of course, that's not everybody. But as a general recommendation, that's really our national guideline now, is that if you drink based on thirst, you probably will stay hydrated. So the idea that 8 8-ounce glasses of water a day, everyone should get that in, really doesn't make a lot of sense when you think that it just really depends on what you are eating, too. Again, if you eat more fruit, you don't need as much water. If you drink more juice or drink more milk or soy milk or tea or whatever you might drink, you don't need as much water. So it definitely, we know that for most people, 8 8-ounce glasses of water in addition to everything else they do is probably way overboard.
Is there a rule of thumb in terms of having too much caffeine from coffee about the number of cups of coffee a person should limit their intake to?
Well, we try to say that a good healthy amount, I wouldn't say healthy amount because for some people any caffeine is problematic because it does bother them, but a good idea is to try to keep it at 300 milligrams or less a day. That's for grown-ups, exactly. For kids, lower the better, really.
How many cups of coffee would that be?
If you look at a strong cup of coffee, that could have 60 to 80 milligrams caffeine, maybe even a little bit more, depending on the size, of course. But so it may be that 3 or 4 strong cups of coffee would be about all in a day of the caffeine you'd need to take in. That might be the upper level. Now, of course, we know that everybody's different with caffeine, and some people, you know, their bodies handle more and they can take it in and be fine. But as a national recommendation, we say about 300 milligrams of caffeine a day. Now, one thing that leads to when you look at fluids is that, you know, where are people getting caffeine? And for a lot of adults and kids, they're taking in caffeine from a lot of these so-called energy drinks. Well, of course, a lot of these drinks don't really have energy. They have sugar and they have flavoring and they have caffeine, most of them, and maybe a few other B vitamins or things. But, many of these drinks in a 12-ounce serving have way over 300 milligrams of caffeine. And so I think that's one of the big concerns is that I see a lot of my clients, especially young athletes, but also adults during the day trying to keep their energy up by drinking mm-hmm. 3 or 4 of these drinks. And they may be getting 600-800 milligrams of caffeine a day, which is not healthy.
Mm-hmm. Final question. About, say, perhaps a week to 2 weeks ago, on one of the national TV news programs, and I believe it was on All Things Considered, too, there was a report which seemed to indicate that even one can or bottle of Diet Pop per day was not good because of its effect on the heart. Could you comment on that study or any opinions you might have on that?
Well, I definitely think that, you know, we have a lot of studies. We have studies to say that a couple cups of coffee a day is helpful, might prevent Parkinson's and might help with diabetes and other things. And we don't know for sure if it's the caffeine or if it's the antioxidants or what it is in there. And so I wouldn't go so far myself personally as a dietitian to say never drink a can of pop or something. But I do think you want to look at the overall nutritional quality of what you take in. And soda is a good example of something that for many people is hard on the intestinal system. It's an acid. It's not the best thing to drink a lot of, let's put it that way. And for those people who are susceptible to, you know, heart rate changes and heartbeat changes with caffeine, then you really have to be careful with what you're taking in. So I'd say the best type of pop or soda to drink would be something that doesn't have caffeine, that would be a light-colored or clear pop, because those also don't have the phosphates that we know from studies can affect bone density and bone strength and those kinds of things. So that'd probably be your best bet for a soda. And then you think, well, maybe a clear one with a little caffeine wouldn't be so bad, but then the dark ones with more mm-hmm. caffeine, a lot of those could cause some, you know, if you take a lot of them in on a daily basis, certainly we know that that could be linked to some other problems.
Yeah. In front of me, I have something here that says that a 12-ounce Coke gives you about 35 milligrams of caffeine, mm-hmm. which isn't, strikes me as not being unreasonable, because your cup of coffee has
More.
Yeah. Quite a bit more than that. However, you know, a lot of folks now, we don't drink just 12 ounces
right.
of a caffeinated soft drink.
Right. I did an interesting little, I guess it was sort of a quasi-experiment not too long ago when we were traveling, and I kind of watched in a busy, in a gas station, and what people drank, and I kind of just watched people for a while. And almost everyone who got the drinks out of the fountain mm-hmm. drinks, almost everybody I watched got the big gulps or the 64 ounces. So 64 ounces of soda is going to be maybe 200 milligrams of caffeine in a lot of cases. And so a lot of that really, like you say, is really the size. Or the same thing with coffee. It's not really an 8-ounce coffee that most of us drink. It's going to be maybe a 16-ounce or 20-ounce coffee. And so the caffeine intake really goes up quickly.
Yeah. Let's talk a little bit now about energy drinks.
Mm-hmm.
They're not the same as sports drinks.
Right.
That is something to be clear about. And there apparently is quite a range in the caffeine that they contain.
Right. I think the biggest thing to know, if you're taking in a sport drink, typically what that is about half the carbohydrate as juice. So it's certainly got some sugar and it's got some carbohydrate, but it's not very high. It's enough that your body can utilize during exercise. And typically some extra sodium, potassium, maybe some calcium or some other minerals that help with what you lose in sweat. So that's typically what's in most sport drinks. Energy drinks, again, are totally different. Usually if they have regular sugar, if they're not a diet product or a low-calorie product, then they're going to have sugar. They're going to have typically the same amount as maybe soda or juice. And often, again, they'll have caffeine added. And sometimes it's in many forms. Now, one of the tricks with a lot of these energy drinks is that you can't often find out exactly how much is in them in terms of caffeine. And so there might be listed, it might say, well, it's got green tea extract, which may have caffeine, and it's got some other herbs, and it's got caffeine itself. And some of the companies list the exact amount, and some of them don't. There have been some concern recently with some of the energy drinks because the level of B vitamins in many of these is so high that there's concern that some people are getting nerve damage by drinking these energy drinks because, you know, the idea is, yes, B vitamins do help with energy production in the body. And so they're supplemented with all these B vitamins to a level that is not necessarily going to even be healthy or helpful. And for some people, it's too much. And so, you know, it's just a totally different group of drinks. And I think, you know, personally, I don't recommend any kind of energy drinks for kids because I've seen kids have trouble. I've seen kids being rushed to the emergency room, and they drank an energy drink. That's what they did. But their bodies couldn't handle that amount of caffeine and the changes in heart rate and whatnot. So I think we just had to be really careful because we can buy these anywhere, but they're not necessarily going to be appropriate, especially for kids.
Yeah. Well, they're really marketed, though, to younger folks.
I mean,
if you got a name like Rockstar,
right.
No Fear, Full Throttle.
Right, right. I mean, you know, you look at, and now some of the syrups that are popular, too, they have the little shots of energy shots, they're called. So, you know, some of these, just a 1-ounce little container of this is 100 milligrams of caffeine or sometimes more. And so this is a problem too because many kids are taking those real quickly, 2 or 3 at a time and maybe more, and then you're getting just a quick burst of what would be 8 cups of coffee or 6 cups of coffee with caffeine.
And when it comes to the label, if you see something like green tea, it seems like, you know, we've heard so many good things about tea.
Mm-hmm.
You don't think about caffeine, and there's also something called yerba mate.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I don't even know what that is.
Yeah.
But that does contain caffeine and guarana.
Mm-hmm.
Are there other things in these drinks that contain
caffeine? Well, those tend to be probably the most
common
ones of what you'd see. You know, so there might be these herbal type things or the green tea and then just caffeine itself that's added in. And one good thing to look at or one thing that I would certainly recommend is that if it doesn't list the actual amount of caffeine, I would never purchase a product because then we really don't know. And there have been many cases where I've had athletes who've taken these. And, of course, caffeine at large amounts is banned by the NCAA at very large amounts. So one of the questions some of my athletes will say, well, how many of these could I drink before I play? And, of course, we don't know exactly how much somebody's going to – depends on how hydrated they are and those kinds of things. But we try to get athletes to not have those before they play. And if they need a little boost of caffeine before they train, my recommendation is iced tea, because iced tea with nothing else in it has some caffeine, but it's pretty low. But it's enough that if somebody feels like they might get a little kick from it, it certainly is not problematic, and just regular iced tea. So, but that I have had athletes, or I've known of athletes who have actually tested positive, been banned for a whole year of play.
Wow.
From these drinks. So that's a real, it's a real concern.
Interesting. This is the Afternoon Magazine. Registered dietitian Susan Kundrat of Nutrition on the Move is with us this afternoon. If you have questions about diet and nutrition, give us a call. Susan joins us once a month, usually on the first Monday of the month, to talk about diet and nutrition. Here are the phone numbers in the Champaign-Urbana area, 333-9455. That's 333-WILL. Anywhere else, toll-free, 800-222-9455, 800-222-WILL. Thirst is a big clue that you need to take some liquids in, some fluids. But can you become dehydrated without realizing it?
You certainly can, and that's where, when these national recommendations came out a few years ago, there was a lot of controversy about them, because for a lot of people, they don't feel very thirsty during the day. It's kind of like hunger. Many people, if they just ate when they were hungry, probably wouldn't have people be overweight. But we don't just eat when we're hungry, right? There's a lot of reasons we eat. There's a lot of reasons we drink or don't drink. And so many people can become dehydrated, even if they are drinking some and think that they're drinking enough. I think it's always helpful this time of year to actually do a liquid log. In other words, track what you're drinking in the day and try to see how much that would be. There's kind of a neat calculator on the website about.com, which has a lot of different things on it. So if you would just get on the website www.nutrition.about.com, you can actually put in, it's called a hydration calculator. And I think these are actually a little more appropriate for people, because it takes in your body weight, your activity. So it's going to ask you questions like, how much do you weigh? How much do you exercise? Do you live at a high altitude, which increases your needs? Is it extremely hot where you live?
I think there's one of these on the Weather Channel's
website. On the Weather Channel, too?
Yeah. And they ask for your zip code. And
they do. Well,
I think they're figuring in, weather conditions.
Sure. And it's a great idea to do something like this if you can get online, because when I figure fluid needs for my clients, a lot of it is based on particularly on their weight and on how active they are. And so we know that the more you weigh, typically you need more fluid. Your body needs more fluid to maintain all the processes in the body. You know, our bodies are about 60-65% fluid. So you've got to think that you're going to need more. You know, a good rule of thumb that's just really basic is to say, well, are you going to the bathroom every 2 or 3 hours at least? Do you have a lot of urine, and is it relatively clear? And if you can answer all those questions yes, you're probably hydrated.
Okay. Let's take some more calls now. Next, we go to a listener in Champaign on line one. Hi.
Hi there. Thanks for taking the call. I only called the tail end of what you said about possible nerve damage related to the energy drinks. And I have a son-in-law who has done a lot of the bulking, and he takes lots of the proteins and whey proteins and things like that. And I know that he really drinks a lot of those energy drinks, and also just generally drinks Mountain Dew and things like that. What is the connection between the energy drinks or the caffeine and nerve damage, unless you've already talked about that enough and I just missed it? And I'll hang up and listen. Thanks.
We'll be happy to go over that again really quickly. It bears repeating.
Yes. Well, the concern with some of the energy drinks is the level of the B vitamins. So it might be B6 or B12 or some of the B vitamins that are in there. And B vitamins are really important for nerve function, so they're very helpful. Some extra B vitamins might be helpful with nerve-related conditions, so we know that. But in huge amounts, like anything, they can actually become problematic. And so there was a review not that long ago that I read. I think it was Mayo Clinic had written an article, and that was one of the main concerns that some physicians are having now, too, and health professionals, is that if you take in a lot of these energy drinks, which are highly supplemented with B vitamins, there is some concern that some people are coming in with concerns like numbness and tingling in their extremities and that could be related to too many B vitamins. And so it's not really related to the caffeine at all. It's more related to the B vitamins and that could affect the nervous system. And caffeine, of course, affects the nervous system too because it does, you know, it does make us jumpy or jittery or, you know, problems like that. But it'd be a totally different scenario. You bring up a good point with a lot of, let's say, athletes or people trying to be fit that they might also be really increasing protein, which some of them need more protein. But sometimes you get protein levels so high that your body can – it has to work extremely hard. Your kidneys have to work overtime to get rid of the byproducts of the protein, in which case you can become very dehydrated quickly too because you have to produce a lot of urine
to
get rid of
dispose of wastes in the body. Okay, right. And then this listener, she might have been not have been listening earlier when we mentioned that the recommended top caffeine intake for most adults is 300 milligrams a day, although some people cannot tolerate it at all.
Right. And to give you, you know, here's another example of what you might find, you know, a list of some of these drinks that are out there right now. There are several that are 400 milligrams per 12-ounce container in just one, you know, container. But there are a lot of them that are 250 milligrams. So you can see where maybe one a day would be about as much as you want to take in.
Okay. Let's take another call. A listener on line 3 in Champaign. Good afternoon.
Hello.
Hi.
I may have missed it, but I noticed you mentioned sugar a couple of times in the last 5 minutes or so. But have you covered the business of the high fructose corn syrup, which people I've heard is worse for you than plain sugar? I'll just hang up and listen. Thanks. Well,
yes, I mean, there's certainly concern about high fructose corn syrup, particularly in large amounts. And does that encourage us to gain weight and maybe encourage some other problems? Well, and I do think that for a lot of food products, if people are having a lot of processed foods or taking in a lot of excess sugar, that no matter what it comes from, it's not a great idea. And I don't know. I think we still don't know for sure if it actually is high fructose corn syrup. It makes sense that there'd be some correlation because that's how a lot of drinks and foods are flavored with extra sugar is using high fructose corn syrup. So I think it's a type of thing where it's, to me, it's not necessarily just the high fructose corn syrup. It's the fact that people are taking in a lot of excess sugar. You know, we see reviews and dietary analysis now to say, well, a lot of people are taking in 30 or 40 teaspoons of sugar a day or more. You know, and of course, if you have a big gulp, I don't know how many teaspoons that would be if it was regular soda and a big gulp, but it would probably be 50 to 60 at least teaspoons of sugar just in that one drink. And so, you know, to me, it's not necessarily the fact that it's high fructose corn syrup. There are things where that's the best thing to use and it does make the product work well and things like that. But it's really the amount of the processed sugar.
Yeah, there's more interest in this now, too. So I would imagine that as time goes on, we'll hear more about the work that's being done, the studies. Let's take another call now. Listener in Champaign, line 2. Hi.
I'm wondering if you can tell me anything about nitric oxide supplements. I know one brand is called NO Explode for kids that are weightlifting and safety and efficacy and that kind of thing.
Yes, it's a really good question and very timely because they're very popular supplements.
Yes, they are.
Yes. Two things I can say for sure. One is that we have very little safety data on these supplements. In other words, they are so hot right now, very expensive, as you know, very popular with weightlifters, bodybuilders, but there's very little data on safety. The second thing is there's very little data on efficacy. In other words, do they really work? Well, there's a lot of anecdotal evidence and there's certainly good marketing that's out there. But as far as good quality controlled studies are just not there. And so I just came back from a big sports nutrition conference this last maybe 3 weeks ago. And this issue came up because they're so popular. But a lot of people who work in the area and do these kind of supplement studies say, well, we just don't have, they haven't even been around long enough to complete the types of studies that we need to complete. What I'll say about these types of supplements is one of the ingredients is arginine. And arginine is an amino acid that's been utilized in many studies, actually, to help with blood flow. And so particularly in people who've got cardiac problems and cardiac insufficiencies. And so the arginine itself, in some studies, helps enhance blood flow To the body. And so I think what's happened is many people have taken that idea and say, oh, if we mix this arginine, which is in these supplements, and maybe add creatine or add some other things, will it give athletes sort of this burst of feeling of blood flow and this kind of feeling like, oh, I can do anything? And will that help them strength train more? And, you know, it's very possible that there is this effect. And athletes that I've known who've used these say, gosh, you know, the trick is it's hard to get people to stop using because they feel this rush.
Mm.
And but whether or not they're going to help you or whether they're at all problematic, harmful. And I have had, I will say, just with my collegiate athletes I work with, I've had more than one who has had problems with severe headaches, severe changes in blood flow. One guy we had to send to the emergency room, and it was from this supplement, this type of supplement. And so there are some, obviously there's, in some people, there are some changes in blood flow, and it's not necessarily the type of thing we want our athletes to be experiencing. And so my recommendation to athletes in a lot of collegiate teams I work with, we tell them absolutely they cannot take these.
Okay.
Because we just have no idea to know how their body's going to be affected by it. And there's just very little evidence to show that they need it either.
Well, you mentioned creatine. What's your opinion of creatine?
Well, creatine, we have tons more studies on creatine, and creatine, particularly in athletes over 18, we have very little data in under 18. You know, a lot of people say, well, we can extrapolate to a 14-year-old football player and say it's fine, but I'm more cautious, of course, because we just don't have those studies with younger athletes. So creatine is found naturally in meat and fish, particularly red meat, so pork, beef, and fish. So my recommendation to my athletes who want to gain muscle is if they need the calories, then we try to get them enough lean protein sources so they can get maybe 2 grams of creatine a day, which is about the amount, 2 to 3 grams a day, that we think is most beneficial for just maintaining lean muscle mass.
Okay.
And then if somebody does decide to supplement with it, we try to make sure that they don't go over the 5 grams a day. Many products say to take 10 or 20, and absolutely you'd never utilize that, and that'd be potentially a problem for the body. And so we try to keep it to 5 grams a day, and we try to make sure they're staying very hydrated if they're going to be using it. But certainly from a safety standpoint for anybody over 18, if they take it appropriately and they need it, particularly vegetarian athletes because they don't get it in food, might benefit even more from it. But if somebody can get a good 16 ounces of lean protein in a day, they can probably get 2 grams of creatine, and that's what I shoot for with my football players.
Okay. Okay. And then you mentioned earlier like the whey protein powder. What are your thoughts on that?
I think whey protein powder, again, if protein needs are high with some athletes who are trying to gain muscle mass, that's probably the best way if you're going to supplement with some type of protein. I would choose a 100% whey protein powder. Usually a scoop is 20 grams, and that's about the amount that the body would utilize well at a time.
Okay.
You know, maybe a scoop and a half or two scoops if needed. But, again, you never want to go over about 1 gram per pound on total protein intake.
So that's the person's weight, 1 gram per pound?
Right.
So your age and your weight is going to be an issue.
Okay. If somebody's in a mode where they're trying to gain muscle mass, let's say right now, you know, working with a lot of football players trying to gain some muscle mass going into the season, then they could probably utilize, if they're a 180-pound athlete, 180 grams of protein is probably the upper limit. Maybe they don't need quite that much, but that's probably the upper limit. And so if they can't get that in regular food, whey protein shake would be a really good way to do it.
Okay. Thank you so much. You've been very helpful.
Thanks for the call. Next, we talk with a listener in Danville, line 4. Hi.
Hello.
Hi there.
Hey, yes, I have a question. You were talking about these vitamin Bs and these drinks, and I have high LDL, and my doctor has recommended, or I have been taking niacin as a supplement, and it's, you know, fairly high dose, but he says I can take. And I was wondering what effect niacin has on the body, and that why is it beneficial? I'll hang up and listen. Thank you.
Okay.
Well, niacin certainly for some people does help bring down cholesterol level. So when you look at the mechanisms of how the body utilizes cholesterol and digests cholesterol, and B vitamins are utilized in a lot of processes in the body, you know, as enzymes, coenzymes for things. And so niacin, because of that, has been found in larger amounts to decrease LDL. And so a lot of people are on that. The most important thing is when you're using niacin that you're being monitored by your doctor, because it's no different than taking Mevacor or something, a medication to decrease lipid levels. And so what we sometimes see with niacin is that we see flushing, which is you might notice that you get kind of warm and your face gets more red, your skin gets more red and hot. But there are some niacin supplements now that don't seem to have as much of a problem with that as well. And again, with niacin, you're typically taking over the recommended amount for the upper level, but it's used more as a treatment. And so, it can be monitored, make sure there's no kidney problems or things like that. And so that would be a case where, as long as you're monitored by your physician, you just want to make sure if you keep taking niacin, think of it like any other medication, that it needs to be monitored carefully and you need whatever work the doc would recommend, to check that out. But typically it's the flushing or the hot, feeling real hot or flushed is the main thing that we might see with niacin.
Okay, let's talk with another listener. Urbana, line one, hi.
Yes, good afternoon. Our granddaughter just turned one and is going on whole milk. And her pediatrician recommended organic milk because concerns about bovine growth hormone.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm curious as to what your thoughts on that are.
Well, my thoughts have changed over the years. I do think from all that we know now, if you can get organic milk, that would be my first choice.
Mm-hmm.
Because to me, it seems that, there could be potentially other concerns. Milk is a wholesome food. It's a great food. It's a good food, no matter if it's organic or not.
Right.
But it is one of those foods. One thing I look at for looking at whether or not you should buy something organic, mm-hmm. is I look at the amount somebody takes in. So, for example, if you eat tons of apples, it'd probably be worth buying organic apples.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, a one-year-old's going to drink a lot of milk. And
right.
So if they have milk, if they have yogurt, things like that, that's probably a good place to spend mm-hmm. a little extra money, because it's such a big part of what somebody will take in, especially at that age. Organic
right.
milk makes a lot of sense. And even my daughter, who, is 6 years old, well, she drinks a lot of milk. So we buy a lot of organic milk because it is a good
yeah.
portion of her calories.
Okay, so that's just sort of in general, or does the growth hormone, is that sort of an additional factor that would concern you?
Well, I think that, that is a concern, and that's something we're learning more about. And I think that there's a lot of concern that maybe these growth hormones through the years, if we're exposed to more and more all the time, that does affect other things, maybe cancer, other things down the road. I don't think we know for sure, but
right.
it would be a sensible thing to do if you're able to do it.
Yeah, I'm sort of on the better safe than sorry
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
road myself.
Yes.
Okay, good. Thank you very much.
Thanks for the call
Bye-bye.
This afternoon. Bye-bye. I remember growing up, my brothers, I had three brothers. My brothers, they drank tons of milk.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. We went through a gallon of milk a day.
I believe it.
And I wasn't drinking very much of it,
Yeah, yeah.
So it was a good thing for them, though.
They
grew up to be big, strong guys.
Yeah.
But
and there are so many good things. You think about protein and calcium and vitamin D and all the other things that we need that you find in milk. And I don't think it has to be all organic, but I think, again, you just really look at the amount of something you take in, and that helps you make that decision.
Yeah. We're coming up against the clock here now, Susan. And we talked quite a bit today about kids. And we had that nice call from the woman who wanted to know about that supplement.
Mm-hmm.
And, some kids are already back at school.
Right, right.
And they may be involved in sports and other extracurricular activities that are physically demanding. And kids talk to kids, and, what's hot is hot.
Mm-hmm.
How are our teachers and our coaches? You mentioned you just got back from a conference.
Mm-hmm.
What's the word in terms of how good a job our coaches and other folks in authority positions are doing in terms of being reasonable with their students
mm-hmm.
and, teaching them,
right?
What's what and, how we make good judgments.
Yeah. Well, I think that more coaches are doing a much better job because they have more resources available. And I think parents are more involved, and that's really helpful, too. I work with a lot of high schools this time of year to try to help them make sure they know what they're doing and have a plan. The whole thing we know about nutrition and fluids for kids, especially when they're working out or they're in a sport, is you have to have some kind of plan. So if they, for example, take snacks so they can grab something as simple as a granola bar and Trail Mix or something right after school so that by the time they practice, they've got some fuel in their system and they're starting to drink. They're drinking all day long and they're drinking between classes when they have a break and those things. And that plan is in place. It makes it so much better. And I think from the coach's end, then their job is to really make sure there's enough fluid breaks that they're drinking. If possible, they're having a sport drink when it's hot. Again, if somebody's sweating a lot and it's hot, sport drink is better than water because you're losing sweat and you're losing, you know, fluids and you're also losing electrolytes. So that maybe a sport drink or kids bring that in addition to water. They're probably going to do a better job of staying hydrated if they do that. And so when the temperature goes down, maybe they get by with more water and less sport drink. But now is a critical time. So I think more coaches know that and parents know that, but we have to be prepared and make sure our kids have these things available, if at all possible. And then the coach's job is to say, well, every 15 minutes we're having a fluid break. Really shouldn't be in the heat. It shouldn't be any longer than that.
Okay, very good. Well, for August, that's where we'll leave it.
Okay.
Thank you very much. We'll see you in September.
Yes.
But the day after Labor Day.
Okay.
So next month it'll be Tuesday.
Tuesday, very good.
Okay, very good. Dietitian, registered dietitian Susan Kundrat joins us once a month, usually on the first Monday of the month, to talk about diet and nutrition. In September, she'll be with us on the first Tuesday of the month. You'll find Susan on the web at www.nutritiononthemove.net.
Programming on WILL is made possible in part by Strawberry Fields on West Springfield Avenue in downtown Urbana. Strawberry Fields has an in-store nutritionist, provides a wide assortment of natural foods, vitamins, and supplements, as well as a full deli, coffee bar, bulk herbs, fresh breads, and produce.
It is 1:52. Let's find out what happened today in Chicago and in Kansas City with commodity prices. Here's Todd Gleason.
Thanks much. So let's take a look at the numbers in Chicago at the Board of Trade this afternoon. Futures in the soft red winter wheat pit finished 14 cents higher, $6.64 settlement price. They had a high of 6.65 and three quarters and a low at 6.41 and a quarter. Nearby soft red winter wheat at $6.64 on their settlement price, up 14, by the way, in Kansas City. The nearby SEP was up 7 3/4 at 47.5, and December futures there at 6.62 and three quarters for the hard red, up 7 3/4. Now back to Chicago, where December futures, $6.83 were up 14.5 cents, a high today of 6.85, a low at 6.60.5. Their settlement price at 683.5, 14.5 higher. March contract, 677 the high, the low at 57. Settlement price at $6.75 a bushel, up 13 3/4. In the May futures, $6.44.5 the high, the low at 26.5. A settlement price at $6.42. They were 14 cents higher. July soft red winter wheat contract in Chicago, 560 the high, the low at $5.50. Settlement price at 558 3/4. And they were 7 1/4 higher. From the nearby contract in the corn pits today, 327 the high, the low at 16.5. Settlement price at 325 3/4, down 3/4. As a reminder, we always give you the composite trade for the highs and lows on our daily and our weekly trade.